Welcome to the Finance Cafe podcast, the business podcast for women entrepreneurs that breaks through the money taboo and explores what's behind the numbers. Join your hosts, Shannon Peston and Shauna Frederick, every week as they dive into conversations about business and finance with women entrepreneurs and the experts that support them to answer all those questions you have about the numbers, and maybe some you haven't even thought of yet. With their combined experience in business, finance, and accounting, Shannon and Shauna know that financial management is more than just understanding the numbers, but understanding how our unique lived experiences, knowledge, thoughts, and behaviors around money shape the financial decisions we make in our companies. Here on the Finance Cafe podcast, presented by Canada's Women Entrepreneurship Knowledge Hub, we're changing the way we talk about business and finance, empowering women entrepreneurs to see their business in a new light. One conversation at a time.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Finance Cafe podcast. Today, we're going to be talking all about crowdfunding. And why? Well, because it's increasingly becoming more and more popular for small businesses who are looking to raise money. And it's also one of the most accessible ways of financing a new idea or a new product. But launching a campaign isn't as easy as just setting up a page on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever platform you're using and waiting for the money to come in. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're also going to be talking about why crowdfunding is creating more opportunities for women entrepreneurs. And as we all know, access to financial capital is a barrier for women entrepreneurs as we're starting and growing our companies. So in this episode, we're going to be exploring what crowdfunding is, why it's worth exploring, why it's the only financing source for women or outperforming men, and what tips our crowdfunding expert, Victoria Bennett of the Crowdfunding Hub, has to share with us today. I'm so excited to introduce this next guest to you. I have met Victoria through several organizations over several years and have always looked at her as a leading voice on crowdfunding and in Canada as well as abroad. So Victoria, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the Finance Cafe.
Thank you very much, Shannon. Thank you for inviting me and giving me a chance to talk about my favorite topic.
Well, and I know you're so deeply passionate about this. So why don't we just give our listeners a little bit of sense of who is Victoria, why you're so passionate about crowdfunding, and of course, who is the Crowdfunding Hub?
Absolutely. Well, let's just start probably about nearly 10 years ago, where many of the people on this call may be where I was then. I was on the board of the Calgary Boys Choir. And it was the City of Culture in Calgary. And the board asked me, can you run a crowdfunding campaign to raise funds? Because it was their 40th anniversary. And we wanted to raise enough funds to pay for all the concerts so that they were free, so anybody in Calgary could attend, and then accept donations so that they could build up a bursary. And I'm like, okay, I hadn't got a clue what crowdfunding was all about. I didn't have a clue. So I sort of launched myself into it and it just really hooked me because we raised enough money to fund all the concerts, which was fantastic. But I just saw that this was a great way, and sort of my brain sort of expanded from just doing that event. It was a great way to raise capital, to raise money, for people who just didn't have that network of friends and family to the same extent, you know, people with deep pockets. And it just opened up doors that many people wouldn't have access to. But on the other side, I also saw a huge opportunity. You know, we're always told by financial advisors, you should have 10% of your funds in private companies, but we don't get access to private companies. It's typically only the wealthiest 3% who have access to private companies, which is where the greatest growth is. So I saw that it opened up doors for people to be able to get into backing private companies. So the whole democratization of capital, and you know, it started from a boys choir, but just poof, expanded from there, really just got me all excited. So I was running set up an oil and gas service company, which we sold to Schlumberger. And my husband stayed on as the global domain champion. And I realized that I needed to have more flexibility in my life. So I set up my business specifically to do strategic marketing and crowdfunding. Hence, we got into this. And that's what I've been doing for the last 9 years. So we actually launched the Crowdfunding Hub itself about 2 years ago. as a sort of specific one-to-many niche. But we've been doing this for 9 years now. I have a nice team around me, and we've probably done over 50 raises and raised over about $20 million.
Wow. So interesting. And I think for many of us, crowdfunding is still relatively new. At least it's becoming more mainstream. And that's why I say I've always thought of you as a leader in this space and really listening to the advice that you gave around crowdfunding. So let's talk about what is crowdfunding. And you mentioned, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but why can it be a viable funding source for entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. So the basic concept of crowdfunding is it is taking small amounts of money from a large group of people to raise a larger amount of money. And, you know, people think, I mean, 9 years, how long I've been doing this, is a long time in crowdfunding land, but it isn't actually a new concept. If you look at the Statue of Liberty, the plinth that the Statue of Liberty was put on was crowdfunded. So Pulitzer, back in the 1880s, reached out through the newspaper, and any backer who backed for a dollar would get a 6-inch Statue of Liberty, and anyone who did $5 would get a 12-inch Statue of Liberty. So, you know, perks have been around for a long time. And that was what raised the $250,000 to actually get the Statue of Liberty built in New York. So it's been around for a long time. Any of you who know Marillion, the British band, they're the first of modern crowdfunding. In 1997, they raised $60,000 for their American tour. So it's been around, you know, for quite a while. But there's many different types of crowdfunding, and I'll go into that in a second. But on the investment side, it's very regulated. So a lot of it, we've had to wait for regulation. We've also had to wait for technology, the platforms to develop. So that's sort of really one of the reasons why it's exploded. The other thing is, if you look at the last increase, was after the 2008 recession, and you know, banks locked down. It was very difficult to get funds. The governments weren't giving out funding, etc. But lots of people have money, and I always say stuffed in their mattresses, you know, squirreled away. We always think about accredited investors as richest 3% of the population, but the other 97% of the population have far more cash, and it's how you access it. And that hasn't been accessed until crowdfunding came along. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, it looks like we are going into recession, why crowdfunding, I think, is going to be really important in the next year or two. And what we see is in mature markets, so the UK probably has the most mature market from a regulatory point of view, it's about 1 in 5 businesses, not startups, businesses that actually use crowdfunding to raise capital. So it could be growth. We're on that trajectory. I mean, Australia started it first. They had the first regulations. UK, they have the most advanced regulations. The tax breaks are just incredible. Would love to have that here. US, it has got pretty advanced regulations. Canada, we've got to catch up. They're not bad, but there are other people leading the way further than we are.
You mentioned that there are different types of crowdfunding, and this is an important distinguishing factor in terms of how you might use crowdfunding in your business. So let's tackle some of the different types. Which is the most popular? Let's start there.
Well, the one that people probably most know about is what we call rewards crowdfunding. So you've probably all heard of Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And certainly in the early days when I was saying crowdfunding, people give me this blank stare. I'd say Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and then people can hook on the information. So that's probably the one that most people know about. But I mean, even things like donations. So you've probably heard of GoFundMe. I did a Just Giving last night for a friend of mine. So the donation side is really interesting, because certainly for charities and not-for-profits, we may well have some not-for-profits on this call, people are very much looking for transactional. So I give you money, and in return, you keep me informed of what's going on. People want to have things broken down, like we're doing a campaign at the moment for Sacred Land up in Edmonton, and we've broken it down. So $30 it pays for ceremonial tobacco, $2,000 pays for a teepee. So people can see what their donation is doing. It's all done online. Everything's automated. Everything's shareable. It's definitely the way that charities and not-for-profits should be looking at for raising their funds. As I say, everyone always knows a GoFundMe. I have to say I'm a big fan of Fundraiser. That's FundRaiser. You'll find that company seems to miss E's out everywhere. They've got a crowdfunder as well, and that hasn't got an E. But that's a Canadian company, and they've raised over $250 million on their platform. So it's actually the largest platform in Canada. So that's the donation side, and you give and you feel good. That's what you're getting. That's the exchange in place. Then you've got the rewards. We've talked about Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Now, if you're a business and you've got a prototype and you want to get it made, but you don't have the funds to get that manufacturing, what about going down the rewards side? So you're not giving up equity, you're not giving up any of your pie, but say you know you need to have 100 minimum order, and you know the item is $100, so you know you straight away you know how much money you need. So you run a campaign and you secure those 100 orders, perhaps you get more, but you then have the money in the bank. You can go to the manufacturer and go, here's the cash, make the item. But what you can also do is you can have that conversation with your backers. Now, they're not buying the item. They are backing you on the hope that they will receive that item. But what you can then do is have the conversation with them. So through the platform, you can say, hey, look, these are the first ones off the production run. Hey, look, we're packing them into boxes. Hey, look, we've done the QAQC and it's well made. Look, these are being shipped. They're being put onto a pallet or whatever. And you keep people informed of what's going on. I'm actually wearing, sorry for podcast people, you can't see this, but I'm actually wearing a watch it's an Android smartwatch. And at the time, it was like the best smartwatch out there. I got it for a slightly better price than I would have got at retail, because being an early adopter, that was one of the things that I got from it. But it actually arrived 3 months late. But the whole way through, they kept me informed. They let me know what the delay was. I could see everything. They managed my expectations. It was great. But it allowed them the funds to actually, you know, create their product. So it's a huge thing. I highly recommend it. So that's rewards crowdfunding.
So in rewards-based crowdfunding then, so I back, and I have had experience in doing rewards-based crowdfunding, but you are buying a reward. So you might be doing a pre-sale, but you are still expecting, as somebody who's buying the reward, that reward is going to come to you. So how does that transaction work?
And that's why the language is very much backing a campaign. And I have had, I think, of the campaigns that I've backed to that have never materialized, I will never touch them again. And their name is sullied. So it is well known, if you aren't going to deliver, you know, give the money back. Unfortunately, the duopoly that we have of Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they're not always the best at identifying them. Again, we in Canada have a new platform, Crowdfunder, as I say, another one missing the E. And they have a lot more technology. They've updated themselves. They've taken what Kickstarter Indiegogo has done and actually, you know, modernized it. And I think there's a bit more protection there. But there still has to be that, you can't have that expectation you're going to get the item. So that's just the one thing to be aware of. There is a risk. And that's one of the reasons you want to look for proof points. So you know, if you're backing a campaign, so just turning it around the other way, if you're actually backing a campaign, look at the team. Do they have a team who can actually deliver? Have they done this before? What proof points are there? I got a coat. It's a smart coat. So I plug it in and then it heats up, which is perfect for Calgary weather. And it's lovely, but you could tell that the lady was trying to do it on her own, and she was a bit sort of deer in headlights. And it really did struggle. Certain things, like she couldn't send the battery with the coat, and she hadn't had that checked out beforehand. So, I mean, I eventually got my coat and the battery, you know, so you need that help sometimes just to fulfill projects like that.
Absolutely. So we've talked about donations type crowdfunding. We've talked about rewards based. Now there's another couple that we still
want to talk about. Yes, absolutely. So we've got peer-to-peer lending. So there's two different types of that. Either you can see like a big portfolio online of different companies and you put your money in, lots of people put small amounts of money in, that gives the funding for the business to do a specific task. And what you as a backer expect back is your money plus a percentage. So, you know, it's very clear you're going to get 8% or whatever. That has been quite slow in Canada, but with the high interest rates, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. Next is royalties. And so for all of us who've watched Dragon's Den or Shark Tank, and we often hear sort of, you know, I'll give you the 100,000, but I want royalties. In that instance, it might be so for every 5% of every sale goes back to you as the dragon until you get your money back plus a bit more. And so the good side of that is you're not giving up equity in your business. And you can also offset it, so you can actually take that royalty out before you pay tax. You can lower your taxes. So that's one of the benefits of royalty. Again, we've not really seen any platforms capture that to the same extent. There's EquityNet, but there's not really the platforms out there doing it, which I think is one of the reasons why it hasn't been so active. And then the fifth type is what we call equity or investment crowdfunding. So this is when there's equity shares typically involved. And so it's the most regulated side. So the government puts all these regulations in just to make sure the businesses are sound. But on the not saying that they're a good investment, just that they're sound businesses. And then they also will look into the person actually backing the campaign, so the investor. But it does open it up to 100% of the population. So in Canada, if you have lived, you don't have to be Canadian, if you've lived in Canada for 6 months in the previous 12 months, you can back a campaign. But there'll be a little check step in there. And so they will typically ask things like your salary, some quite personal details. So just, it's not like buying a book on Amazon, but they'll ask a few details. And what they want to do is, if this company goes bust, you can still put food on the table. You'll still have a roof over your head. So for anybody who's ever invested in a private company before, they find the process super easy. But if you've never done it before, it's a bit like, whoa, why are they asking me these questions? But the same questions that Questrade or Wealthsimple or BMO or whoever asks, there's nothing different there. But just remember, you're buying typically shares, often common shares in Canada. In the US, it tends to be preferred shares. But you're actually getting part of that business, and you're getting it typically at an early stage. So this is before that massive growth. Now, as I mentioned at the start, some of these companies are going to go bust. And so, you know, work on the basis that's going to happen. Some of these companies are going to do fine. And so hopefully one or two of them will actually do brilliantly. And so if you're looking at it from an investor point of view, that's the way to look. As a company, yes, you are giving up some of your business. And so what I would just say with that is you're actually going to have a bigger pie. So yes, it's your baby. You've got to give some of it up. But I would also have a look at, and I'm probably jumping ahead of myself, so I apologize on this one, but I just get quite passionate about this because I've just seen one where it went wrong. Think about ultimately what funds you need. And then think about how much of that pie you're willing to give up. So you think about what you can give up today, because this is probably going to be your lowest valuation. Then you're going to grow the business. When you give up the pie, the price is going to go up. And so, you know, you can give away slightly less of your pie. You want to make sure that at the end, when you're fully funded to do everything you want to do, the founders are still majority owners of the business. Because that's what investors are wanting to see, because they want to know that you're fully committed to this. They want to know that you have skin in the game. They want to know if you have a really bad day, you're still going to get up, you're still going to drive the business. So just having a think long term, often people just think about that initial raise, but think about where you want to go ultimately.
Okay, so much information in that bit here. So I'm going to just back up and just repeat some of the things that I heard. So there's really five types of crowdfunding as you've outlined. So there's a donations type crowdfunding, which is really great for nonprofits and for charities for being able to raise money from the crowd. And that crowd can be anyone, The second mm-hmm. type that you mentioned is rewards-based crowdfunding. So that's really great if you're trying to get pre-sales for the company or you're trying to get a product. It might even be just a good marketing strategy really for a business to get more of its product out to the market. But that's really good, I would say, from what I'm hearing, for things like consumer packaged goods where you have something that you will be able to give to the market. So your backers, i.e. your funders, the people that are giving you money to your campaign are going to be expecting a reward back in exchange. Mm-hmm. So that reward could be, we'll talk about rewards a little bit in a second, but I just want to close up that they're going to be expecting a reward, not to say that it's guaranteed. So unlike a donation where you're giving that money, you're not expecting anything back per se in rewards, there is a mutual exchange here of I'm going to give you money, but I want something back in terms of product. Then you mentioned that there's peer-to-peer lending types of crowdfunding where backers, i.e. funders for your company, will invest in the company by way of giving you a loan. But in exchange, then I'm going to give you the money, but you're going to pay me back some interest. And so that is the win from the backer side. Also, mm-hmm. now there is royalties. So I'm going to financially support your company. I will be a backer or a funder of your company. But as the sales go, I want 2% or 3% or whatever that is in exchange for my giving to your company. And then last you talked about, and probably the most complex out of all the structures, mm-hmm. is the equity type funding. So in that scenario, this is the only one that I'm hearing so far where you are actually giving up some share ownership in your company. Mm-hmm. So somebody's investing in your company, you are giving up shares in exchange for that investment. Did I capture that?
Perfectly. Yes. Yes.
There's a lot happening in this space. And, you know, and I guess it kind of goes back to how do I know? So if I have a business, how do I know what kind of crowdfunding option out of all of these is best suited to me?
Well, I think, I mean, you explain it really clearly. I mean, there's some that obviously jump out. Part of it is also just the amount you want to raise. I mean, when you see these rewards campaigns, say on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that you know, raising over $1 million, they are exactly as you said. They're more of a marketing ploy, and they've typically spent $200,000-$300,000 on advertising.
Wow.
So, yeah. The average amount that's raised on a Kickstarter or Indiegogo is usually around that sort of $10,000 amount. So if you're looking for those lower amounts, that would be when you'd be sort of on that side of the crowdfunding. With equity crowdfunding, there's a lot of, you know, upfront costs involved. You've got to play the platform. You've got to make sure that you do, when you go through due diligence, they want to see things like accounts. So there is an upfront fee. So really, it's not that viable under about 100,000, usually about a quarter of a million. I find at the moment the sweet spot in Canada is about that 500,000 million.
Okay.
You can raise up to 1.5 million in Canada. In the US it's 5 million. So as I say, just the regulations, you have a local platform with the regulations that that fit where your business is located.
This might be a really good opportunity as well, maybe just to say, like, as this environment is so difficult to navigate, this is really where the crowdfunding hub can come in and act as a resource for entrepreneurs as well, because you can help vet and give some of that advice to the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, we actually have a free program online, which is to educate people what is crowdfunding and to help them decide whether it's right for the business. Because I'll say when I meet companies, probably kill about 7 out of 10 of them for crowdfunding. Now, some of that is just because they're not businesses. It's a hobby. Some, it's not appropriate. You've got to be able to tell a story. And so if you can't tell the story, if you can't articulate the why, then that's a bit of a challenge. You know, I'm always looking for what's the need that you're addressing. So, and I want to see you've got a passion about that need. And then I also want to see sort of, you know, what your solution is, especially with the early stage companies. Your solution isn't always the right solution, which is why I want to see passion in the need, what you're trying to address, because that will drive you to come to that right solution. So that's what I want to look for, is I want to look, you know, can you articulate it? how big is the market? Can you actually address that market? Is that market growing? These are all things that investors are typically looking for. So I just want to make sure that you're on the right track for that. And that's what we offer in the Crowdfunding Hub, is we have, as I say, we have a free program in there, and it walks you through, and it also walks you through the sort of the process. So how it actually works. We recommend a 90-day process to prepare for a campaign. In the case of an equity crowdfunding campaign, that 90 days also includes what we call due diligence, which is what the platform has to do to make sure what I was saying about, you know, yeah, they'll check you out as a business and make sure that a lot of the background checks are being done. As a backer, you still need to do your due diligence, but at least know that professionals have been in there and rooted around everything. But that's one of the reasons we do in 90 days. But also, we really want to make sure that we get as many people knowing about your campaign and excited about your campaign and warmed up. So we want to build your crowd. So that's one of the reasons we have that 90 days to really build your crowd. So that on day one, we want to make sure that we get 11% of your target hit on day one and 33% in that first week. If you hit those two milestones, the chances are you will hit your overall goal. And that's the one thing just to look at is, you know, it's about 20 to 30% success rate of crowdfunding campaigns. And a lot of that is because people believe build it and they will come. Wow. And, you know, you will only get about 15% of traffic from the platform. You have to bring everything else, which is why that prep work is so important.
So lots to think about this. And I think that's a great segue to ask you, what do the most successful projects have in common? What are these entrepreneurs doing that is making them a success? It's not every campaign is going to be a success. And also, what is success in a crowdfunding environment?
I'll start with what is success in a crowdfunding environment. So I'll give you an example. So many of you may know the Very Good Butchers out of Victoria. So they're a vegan butchers. They butcher beans and they wanted to raise $500,000. And I said to them, so what's the minimum you need to do something meaningful? And the minimum they needed was actually $100,000. So what we did was we set up their campaign with a minimum of $100,000. So they were sitting at $237,000. And everyone was going, what a success. You know, it's 237% above the target. And everyone was really ecstatic about it. There was another campaign that was actually at $337,000, but their target was $1 million. And everyone was like, well, it's a failure. It's only a third. But they'd raised $100,000 more, but there's a lot of gamification and psychology around crowdfunding. People want to see the proof points of other people backing it. So they had that minimum, they blew through it, and they actually achieved 600,000. So they actually achieved 100,000 more. So part of it is, you know, what is success? I always like to look at what's the minimum you need. And don't worry if you just achieve the minimum. If your minimum is 100,000 and you can push the peanut forward, you can then also go for grants. What about getting a matching grant for 100,000? You've got 200,000 straight away. What about just achieving that, what you need to do with that 100,000? And then you go back and go, hey, backers, I said I was going to do X and I've done X and we've achieved Y. Now we need Z. And people are more likely to back you. I did that with Ecologist. Initial raise was 700,000. We went back. We said we did all four things we said we're going to do. Next round, we raised over $1.5 million because we said what we're going to do. We did it. And then, you know, we went back to the backers. So what does success look like? Achieving your minimum, I would say. Also, for some people, it's the number of backers. Especially for people going public, they might need to have a certain number. That might be a thing. It might be getting ambassadors. And that's a huge part of crowdfunding, is getting these people. Imagine going out to the pub on a Friday night and being able to say, I own part of this beer. Mm. You know, how cool is that? Mm-hmm. But what other beer are you going to drink? You're not going to drink any other beer because that's your beer. You own it. You might only have $100 of it or $250 or $1,000 of it, but it's your beer. Those ambassadors are going to be talking. So that's what success looks like. And those are some metrics you have to define.
This is great because I'm trying to get a sense of like, what do successful campaigns do and what does success look like? But I want to just stay on one path. If I set a financial target, do I have to hit it in order for that campaign to be considered successful? Because I just heard you say that the bean growers, for example, that they met their first goal, they exceeded their first goal, but then didn't to the second. So how does that work? Do you have to meet your target or not?
Yeah. So if we look across all types of crowdfunding, Kickstarter isn't what we call an all or nothing. And the reason for that is if you need, say, 10,000 to be able to manufacture your item and you only get 5,000, then you can't manufacture your item and you're just going to let people down. So Kickstarter is an all or nothing. And so, you know, if you're at $9,900, just chuck $100 of your own money in to get that, because if not, you have to give the money back.
Right.
Whereas on investment crowdfunding, there is usually a minimum raise. And again, you have to give that money back, because if you can't do anything meaningful with it, it's not fair on you as a business, but it's not fair on your backers either. But that's why I always say, what's that minimum you need to do something meaningful? Now, in the case of the Very Good Butchers, they needed in total 500,000. We got them 600,000. So we beat their upper target, but we could have stopped at the 100,000 if that was all we had raised. You know, they would still have had success and they could have gone away, expanded their facility, and then come back to raise the other 400,000 at a later stage. So yes, it is actually written into the documentation. So that is sort of a limitation, but you could make the minimum a dollar if you wanted to. If you can still do something meaningful with those funds, then do it.
I really like how you talked about doing multiple campaigns. So you kind of start small. So you kind of figure out what that minimum number is where you can do something meaningful. But as you said earlier, having a strong management team in place or a strong leader in place is really important for any company. So what a great opportunity to say, here's how we manage the funds. This is what we're able to do with it. Now we're at a place to go for more growth or to create more products or whatever that next goal is for the company. And now here's asking for, you know, the crowd again to support them on that next stage. So setting meaningful targets is one aspect of this, but what else do other successful campaigns do to get them to meet their goals?
Absolutely. I'm just going to say one point. One thing that you can also do is say perhaps run a Kickstarter, an Indiegogo, a crowdfunder, a rewards campaign to get that. And then you can do an equity campaign and you can reach out to those people who backed the first campaign and upgrade them into shareholders. So I just wanted to sow that seed because it's a really exciting way of doing it. So one of the things I'm always looking for, I want to see an unmet need with a market that you can address with a solution. And I say, I want you to be passionate about that need. Second is I want to see a team. And, you know, just pertinent to where you started today, I often get presented with a group of old white men and it drives me nuts. I'm like, where's your diversity of thought? Or how are you going to come up with the best ideas? You know, so I'm often suggesting to them to bring in an advisory board with some more diversity or really championing getting more diverse thought. So I want to see the team because you need a team to deliver behind. You know, if it's one is having their network, because a third of the funds is going to come from people you know, a third is going to come from the people they know, and a third is going to come from the additional activities. And that third that you know, because you're doing equity crowdfunding, it's not just the people with deep pockets. You know, it can be people can put smaller amounts in. So that's one of the great things, because you open up to the 97% that have been locked out of investing in the past. So that's where having a team is useful, A, for the delivery, but also for those networks. And then the third thing is that crowd. And so with a crowd, you know, I want you to either, you know, you're going to have a bit of a crowd, but I want you to be able to build that crowd. So that's organic growth over time, getting to know you, getting to understand your business, getting excited. You could borrow a crowd. So what you can do is you can work with an organization and use their network to share the campaign. So you can borrow your crowd or you can buy a crowd. And we've already talked about the Kickstarter Indiegogo campaigns where people put sort of 200,000-300,000 down. I still think you should look to spend about 10% of what you're looking to raise on advertising. But in this current climate where iOS 13, 14, 15 and the impact of advertising is so major, really what you're looking to do is you're looking to get as many emails as possible and bring people on the journey. So in that 90 days prep, one of the big success things is to build up that database of emails, send them an email every week telling them, who you are, why you're passionate about this. Because when you invest in a public company, you never get to deal with the founders. You never get to deal with the CEO. This is a great opportunity to actually get to meet them. So why are they passionate about it? Why is their solution better than what's the competitions out there? What's their business model? How are they going to make money? And how are you going to make money? So these are all the things that you can send out via email. And we know it used to be you had to see something 7 times before you acted on it. It's now 11 times. Oh, wow. So imagine those drip campaigns, those emails can be those 11 times. You're bringing people on the journey. You're getting people excited. Then the next thing you need to do is you need to educate people about crowdfunding. Some people won't have a clue what it is. Some will know what Kickstarter, Indiegogo is. But as I say, they'll think it's like buying a book on Amazon and they need to be educated. So what you need to do is you need to say to people why you're crowdfunding. You need to say to people what the process is. And then you're going to say you're going to get early access and you give them, reward them early access to go in and invest. So that means that when you go live to the public, you have traction. And that's, as I said, success breeds success. So that's what you want to see. It wins for you, wins for them. Get them to sign up. And so those are sort of things that I'm looking for a successful campaign, is that planning side.
Yeah, Victoria, thank you for all of those tips about what it takes to make a successful campaign, because it's not just a set it, forget it. Like, this is a very intentional process. You have to be very clear on why you're raising the funds, what the money is going to be used for, how to engage your crowd, how to keep growing that crowd, and also being able to stay engaged during the process, because you might go days without actually seeing any money coming into the company. So being able to keep yourself motivated through some of those darker days of crowdfunding too, because I've certainly seen that. But having experienced myself working with women entrepreneurs going through crowdfunding, one of the stats that has always stayed with me was one that women outperform men when it comes to crowdfunding. And I wanted to get your sense on this, because of course you see both men and women. I was working specifically with women entrepreneurs on their crowdfunding campaign, but what, from your perspective, why is this the only financing source where women are outperforming men?
I think part of it is just the way that women run businesses and the types of businesses that women are running. And it's also just the way that they run and handle their campaigns. So from my point of view, women tend to be better at storytelling and people will back campaigns that they believe in. Data shows if you give people a story, if you give people financials, and if you give people both, the one that is most likely to be backed is the one with the story only. Weird. You would have thought story and financials would be the, but actually it's a story. So having somebody who's good at storytelling, I think is key. I will say realism. So often women will bootstrap. And so when I've seen them bootstrap, I'm like, we're going to just inject a little bit of cash into there and they will explode as a business because they know every single penny where it's spent. And so I think that realism then translates into, if you give me 100,000, I can achieve this. So they're not asking for a massive amount of money, but it's going to have a massive impact. And I think that's one. I will just caveat that. Women, if you need the big dollars, ask for them. Don't hold back. That's one thing I see. I adjudicated an event last week and it was like, the all-male group asked for 850,000 and there was a female-only group and they were asking in the hundreds. It was just, if you need it, ask for it. But I really appreciate the realism. I think that's part of it. If we go back to our caveman days, we're better at multitasking. And that is one thing with the process. There is a lot going on and you still need to run the business. So the multitasking, I think, is really helpful. And just getting some of those setup things just right, that's part of it. And I know I'm using generalizations, but also the planning. So it is, it's a very clear process what you need to do. And I think, you know, often women just fit into that and just get it done. There's no mucking around. It's just get the stuff done. And that to me is why women outperform men when it comes to crowdfunding.
So I love that you said that women don't ask for what they really need. I certainly saw that in business banking, and I would always see that women would underestimate their projections and men would overstate their projections. And so important as you're thinking about what do I need to meaningfully grow this business, ask for what you want. It's not the dollar amount, it's what you're going to do with it. And I just think it kind of speaks to our scrappy nature as women, you know, in terms of using every single dollar the most efficiently that we can and seeing how far we can take that dollar. Yes, I know we're speaking in generalizations, but these generalizations are there because we tend to see this in different financing avenues. But really exciting to see that this is something that more women are starting to engage in.
I just want to say one thing is you talk about the effort, and there is effort. It's not quick and it's not cheap, but the value you get is incredible. Getting these ambassadors, getting the funding, getting these people ready for your next round. And that's the thing, you know, we talk about that small amount. If you're one of the 1% that need the VC rocket fuel to grow your business, the feedback I'm getting from VCs now and from angels is that they're liking people who've gone through crowdfunding because you're investment ready. You know, you have an investor deck, you've talked to investors, you're managing investors, you know what investors are looking for, you've gone through due diligence, you've been validated, you've got all these people backing you, you know, you're providing deal flow to angels and to VCs. So, you know, look at this as part of your investment journey. So if you need future investing and, you know, you need to go outside of the 1.5 million limit in Canada, for example, then you're in the right place to get that angel investment. You're in the right place to get that VC.
I love that you just said that. And I also want to kind of call that out for the debt journey as well. So if you were going to a bank to try and ask for some money, it's a great proof point to show your lender what you've been able to do. So talk about the investment that you had, talk about the number of backers that you had. And I think for a lot of women-led businesses, we're not really sure what the bankers are looking for. So this is a great way to say, we have a market. This product through the campaign has demonstrated that people are willing to buy it. So many great points. I feel like I know you're passionate about this area, and I certainly feel it from you. I feel my own energy going up, but I also am a huge fan of crowdfunding. And obviously, we could never go deep, deep, deep into each of these scenarios, and no two business acts the same. But I think this is a really great opportunity to do a next call to action. So if you are a woman entrepreneur who is thinking about running a crowdfunding campaign, the Crowdfunding Hub is a fantastic place to just to start deepening your understanding of crowdfunding. And Victoria, of course, you're there as well. So I'd love to just give you the last words to talk about what can women do. We've had this conversation today. If they're eager to learn more, what should their next steps be?
Absolutely. So follow us on social media, sign up for our newsletter. We have a tip of the week that comes out every week for our newsletter. If you want to go through our free course just to understand, is crowdfunding right for your business? If it is, great. If it's not, great as well. I mean, you know, I don't want you spinning your wheels. We do have a paid course where we actually have templates that will walk you through and increase your chance of success. If you look at something like iFundWomen, which is a US-based platform, they say, you know, it's about 70% increase of success if you actually have that extra support. So we're here for you. We also have a crowdfunding for authors course, which I run with an internationally renowned author. So, I mean, even if you're writing a book or coaching, you know, we do have some unique courses in there. So have a look at our website and see what's right for you. Reach out to me and I'd be happy to help.
Oh, well, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us and talking about crowdfunding. And I know that I always learn something from listening to you about just even the changes, because, you know, as we said, this is about 10 years of technology in Canada where it's really becoming more mainstream, but it's also changing really quickly because we didn't even have equity crowdfunding up until a few years ago. So this is how fast, at least in Canada, this is how fast the industry is moving. But I thank you for all of your support. Thank you for giving your time and your knowledge to our listeners. We'll make sure that we put all of your company information inside our show notes. And any final words from you, Victoria, before we sign off?
No, I mean, one thing I would say is if you're thinking about crowdfunding for your business, go and have a look at some of the platforms that are out there. Why not back a campaign and actually find something you believe in? Look at the process and, you know, you're supporting it's, you know, we all need to support each other, back something you believe in, and just do your part and learn about the process and see if it's right for you. If you're in Europe, you can do it from 10 euros. We can't do that over here. But over here, it's usually minimum is about $100 or $250. And I say $100 is a good night out. $250 is a really good night out. So instead of having a really good night out, you're actually backing a company that you can believe in.
Well, amazing. So thank you so much. Great advice. I haven't done the equity crowdfunding yet. So now I'm going to go and check this out. I have done Rewardspace. I have been a backer in several campaigns, but I love the idea of exploring the equity. What a great way for us to start investing some of our money into other companies and watching them grow and also being part of that future wealth creation. So there's a whole other conversation there, I am sure. Crowdfunding to build your wealth, but we're going to sign off on this note today. Thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. Victoria, the Crowdfunding Hub, thank you so much for coming on. To our listeners for joining us again this week, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Finance Cafe podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by leaving a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. And to ensure you never miss a new episode, make sure you subscribe to the show. If you'd like to stay connected with us, you can find us on social at The Finance Cafe Official or on our website at thefinancecafe.ca. See you again next week for another episode of the Finance Cafe podcast.